Stay calm, don't panic. You got this.
Hey guys, welcome to season 3 of the Don't Panic podcast. This is Chris Roby, and across from me is Carly Duke. We are back.
We're back.
Yeah, yeah. It's
better than ever.
Yeah, exactly. This is I don't know that I thought we would get to 3 seasons doing this, but I'm really thrilled that we are because we're back with great topics and things I think that will help you. If you're listening to this podcast and you're just pulling this up and don't know what this is about, we are here to help the helpers. So anyone who works with a teenager should be able to benefit from this podcast. So not only if you're a parent or a pastor or a counselor, but really anyone who has a role in the life of a teenager should benefit from this podcast. So that's why we do this. That's why we're back for a 3rd season.
Exactly. So we're glad that you've stuck it out with us, and we're excited to kind of do things a little differently this year or this season, but in a good way that hopefully is easier for you to digest what our speakers are saying and take things and actually be able to apply them to what you're doing with your teenager. So we're excited to kick off this season.
Yeah. So what's going to be different this year? As we kind of prepared for this season, we knew we wanted to provide really good content. That was important to us. We've gotten great feedback from the content that we've given so far. We want to continue along those lines. But we also wanted to have the opportunity to tell you more about what we do with Teen Life. And if you listen to the podcast very long, you might have heard us called Teen Lifeline at one point. that was our original organizational name was Teen Lifeline. And how long ago was it now that we changed? Is it back in October?
Yeah, back in the fall.
So 6-8 months ago, we made the name change to Teen Life. And so we do the same thing. We all the same services and same people, just a different name that kind of helps better communicate what we do and not get confused for a hotline.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, but we want to give you the audience, not only great content, but insight into what we do, who works with us, how this whole thing works. So we came up with this idea, and I hope you like it, that we are going to each week for 8 weeks, or I guess each podcast for 8 sessions, will cover the specific week and topic of our curriculum. We have an 8-week curriculum that we do in the public schools. And so we're going to take each one of those the thrust of each one of those lessons and break that down and bring you a podcast with that topic.
Exactly. So you'll kind of get what works with us. We work with teenagers every week in hard times and difficult times. And so we're going to give you a little bit of insight into what makes that tick, how we have good conversation, and what kind of things that we bring up with teenagers. And so we're excited for you to get a little glimpse into what we do. And we're also excited to bring back some of our experts who've been with us before. So you've heard them. They're the episodes that you loved, some of the most downloaded episodes. And so you're going to get to hear a different spin and a totally different topic from an expert who has a great voice for that specific topic.
Yeah. And we will also, at the end of every podcast, we're interviewing some of our facilitators. So these are volunteers. Youth pastors, stay-at-home moms, social workers, people who will volunteer an hour of their week to go into a public school and lead a support group with our curriculum. And so at the end of every podcast, Carly's going to interview them, and you'll get to hear some stories, some things that have made impact on their lives and their ministries or their the things that they're doing in their community. Based upon leading support groups with Teen Life. And so you're going to get a glimpse of what this whole thing is about. Because sometimes it really is hard to explain, and it's really better just to hear what happens. And so hopefully you'll get a good glimpse of all of that. Today we get to talk to Dr. Mark DeYoung, who originally, I guess the first time we interviewed him, talked about anxiety.
Yes.
And was just a people really responded to that. Mm-hmm. That topic. And I don't, I would say I was surprised about it, but I guess I was a little bit how many people wanted to hear that about that and help their students with the anxiety issue. Dr. Mark is going to be talking with us about the power of the check-in, which is really what we do in this first week. Mm-hmm. So stick with us. Stick with us after the podcast. We'll do a little breakdown of the interview and check this out. Relationships between adults and teenagers have always been complicated. Teenagers are walking a path towards self-discovery and independence, leading towards outward displays of rejection of the adults in their lives. Adults, while deeply desiring to help and maintain their relationships, often find roadblocks that can lead to frustration. These tensions are normal and even necessary for adolescents to develop their identity. As adults, we have to find ways to interact with and support the students we love in a way that helps them along in their journey towards self-discovery, while also creating space for a healthy relationship along the way. In this episode, Dr. Mark DeYoung of the In-Home Family Therapist explains the concept of the check-in and how we can use it to create space for conversation and relationship building. We're here with Dr. Mark DeYoung to talk about the power of the check-in. Dr. Mark, thanks for being here with us today. We're thrilled to have this conversation. We at Teen Life use this tool of the check-in at the beginning of all of our groups. And when we talk to our students, it seems like this is the thing that they really connect with, is every week an adult coming in and in a very simple way saying, how are you doing with different parts of life? And so this was a great first subject for us to talk about. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the check-in? And how it works.
Sure. Thanks, Chris, for having me. Yeah. I'm really glad to be invited to be a part of this series and be a part of helping Teen Lifeline. I really appreciate what you guys do. Mm-hmm. The check-in is really an opportunity for adults to have an entrance into the teenager's world. And it's a simple way to engage them to better understand some of the ups, some of the downs, some of the victories, some of the challenges that they're experiencing. If any of us as adults kind of know about talking to teens, many times it's hard to get them to talk to us. Mm-hmm. Very often the response is door closed, leave me alone, or the common teenage answer, which is, I don't know, or I'm fine. So, the check-in is a way to kind of gently and, safely enter into their world to get a better sense of what's going on with them.
Okay. So tell me a couple ways this works, like, just functionally different ways that adults can check in.
So I think the ways that, parents can, find out what's going on with their kid is to ask very simple questions like, tell me about your day at school. Now, that's really broad, but you can narrow that down to be more specific and kind of ask about a specific aspect of school. Okay. Like, you might be able to say, not just how was your day at school, but you might be able to say something like, tell me what was your favorite part of the day today? Mm-hmm. Or tell me, was there something that made you laugh today at school? Or was there something that a teacher did that made you upset? Mm-hmm. And so to get kind of specific. Mm-hmm. The other thing is to gauge their emotional state. So many times a therapist or folks that work with teens will use things like, give me on a scale from 1 to 10, how bad something was, you mm-hmm. know, 10 being it was the worst thing ever, to 0, it wasn't bad at all. Or tell me how happy that made you feel, 10 being the happiest you've ever felt and 0, not happy at all. Mm-hmm. Or just generally, how are you feeling today? 10 being the most awesome day and 0 being not awesome at all. And if they tell you a 3, say, well, what makes it a 3? Can mm-hmm. you tell me a little more? And just be just inviting that kind of a conversation.
Yeah, so kind of a scaling deal there. Yeah. So as we talk about the check-in, let's talk a little bit about the heart of kind of what you're going for here. First of all, you tell us that to be good at this check-in thing, we want to be non-specific and curious without an agenda. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So check-ins are, I guess, I think, good foundational building blocks to relationships, and are simple conversation starters. The goal of the parent is not to solve a problem. In other words, you don't need to have an agenda to figure out why the kid is having a failing grade. Mm-hmm. You want to enter into their world, and as you do that, as you attempt to understand, you'll find out why they're having a failing grade, but the agenda is really just to understand them. So curiosity is essential to that. I will often explain to parents that it's like being a squirrel on a tree, and you're going to start down one branch, and you're going to explore to the very end of that branch and look for all the acorns. And then when you're done with that branch, you come back to the trunk, and you go to another branch, and you explore down there. And the goal is not necessarily to fully know the tree. The goal is to understand and to get a sense of what that child, that teenager's internal world is like. And so curiosity is essential. So asking questions versus making statements is the biggest part of that.
Yeah. And I think, obviously the way we ask the question is important, what we start with.
Yes. And drilling kids with 20 questions like a machine gun doesn't work. You have to give kids a chance or a time, to think through, their answers. And, oftentimes if you're going to truly take a curiosity stance, a kid who says, "I don't know," we have to respect that. And, sometimes that means saying, "I can wait," or "We can come back and discuss it later if you'll think about it."
Yeah, yeah.
And being patient.
Being patient. Okay, so being curious, non-specific, without an agenda. Secondly, empathy is really the ultimate goal here. Talk to us a little bit about empathy and maybe even empathy versus sympathy.
Yeah,
absolutely. What that looks like.
Yeah, so empathy is really the idea of, I want to be in the skin of this person. I want to know what it's like to sit in their chair, to be in their shoes, to experience their world the way that they experience it. Sympathy is an acknowledgement of pain or an acknowledgement of a challenge, but it includes basically trying to fix the problem. And with empathy, we're not solving problems. We are genuinely just trying to help the other individual feel understood. All teenagers are trying to figure out who they are. That's an essential developmental task of their age, and trying to develop their identity. What are their gifts? What are their weaknesses? What were they created to be? And as they're trying to sort that out, and a great piece of helping them is to feel understood. Many times parents want to fix problems with kids, and they want to make sure that their kids are following rules. And though those are essential, you know, we want kids to respect authority and follow rules, probably more important, but definitely not utilized very much, is we need to help them feel understood, because as we help them feel understood, they begin to develop that identity. It's in empathy that they start to understand who they really are.
And it seems like there'd be a challenge for a parent to try to get into their student's shoes, because you've known them their whole life, and it's easy to say, "Well, I know what it's like in their shoes, because I raised them, and I, you know,
that's right."
And so that's gotta be a tough shift for a parent to make, to say, "Okay, this my child is now becoming an individual that's outside of what I've always known, and I've got to figure out a way to figure out what are they going through."
That's true. And I think when we live with somebody 24/7, we really think we truly know them. But if we do empathy and understanding conversations where we take this stance of curiosity, where we're really just curious. We're not trying to solve things, fix a problem, give solutions. We're just truly trying to understand. We'll be surprised at the responses we get because it becomes a safe enough place for sometimes what we think we know about our kids, they haven't been telling us because they haven't felt safe enough to tell us. But the less they feel, as the teenagers say, the less they feel judged, the more they'll tell us.
So, I know when we did an interview with Dr. Beth Robinson last year on talking to kids about sex, and one of the things she talked about was the Columbo approach to being a parent of kind of being bumbling, not sure what you're talking about, and asking basically as if you don't know, kind of thing.
That is correct.
I thought that was a brilliant way of approaching that. So we're wanting to be nonspecific, curious, and having empathy as our goal. Functionally, you talk about this being part of a routine, part of your day to day, and maybe even ritualized part of your life. Talk about the check-in being part of a routine.
Yeah, I think it. And by routine, I would basically say it needs to be a part of an ongoing effort of your part to, as a parent, to get into their world. I think if you schedule anything. Well, one, you can never schedule a relationship.
Right.
So scheduling it might become problematic. In other words, okay, we're going to sit down at 5:30 and talk about your school day.
Right.
It's probably not going to go very well. But if you have a mindset as a parent, I really want to know what's going on in their world, that means you'll put your iPhone down or your device down and you will engage them in a conversation at moments that it seems safe and good to do that. So it's having the eyes as a parent to go, is this a good time? Or let me try and make this work, this conversation happen now. Times that seem to work for a lot of parents are like taking drives in the car, whether it's a drive to the doctor's office or drives to school in the morning or in the afternoon. The dinner table is another great time. Where there's just general conversation that happens about the day or the week or what's going on in the family as a whole, but it's just a part of an ongoing conversation. And it can have that non-specific approach where we're just kind of talking, and that helps. Bedtime routine is another great one. I will often suggest to parents, why don't you schedule 15 minutes in the evening as your kid's getting ready for bed or as they're kind of settling in bed to go and sit with them in their room. And I will often suggest to the parent, don't sit in an opposing way where you're facing them, but get on the floor beside their bed and just say, tell me something about your day. And open up the door while you're sitting there. If you go and sit in a chair and face them on the bed, it can feel almost threatening. And you want to take that non-threatening approach. Get down below them, get on the floor, grab a pillow, lay on the floor, and don't directly face them. Sometimes that face-to-face looking at somebody in the eye can be too much, especially for a teenager who still doesn't know who they are. Be curious, talk to them, but don't feel like it has to be this driven one-on-one face-to-face conversation.
Right. And it seems like in these situations too, removing anything that could be a distraction would be helpful. Like, so if you are doing this car drive, that, you know, maybe this is a cell phone free time or whatever that is, whatever you can create that space where conversation can happen, even if you don't know what you're going to say.
That's right.
Being able to say, I'm going to remove whatever barriers that would be there.
Yeah. And I think parents have to take the lead in removing those barriers. We're not, and I will confess probably to struggling with this as much as anybody, but as parents, we're not modeling putting the technology down. And we've got to put the technology down and model that for our kids so that if we're going to have a conversation with our kid, get the phone out of sight.
Right.
Put it away. Make sure that the kid sees that you're not going to be picking up the phone. When it rings, you're not going to be picking up the phone. When it dings to check the text, you're fully engaged with them, and you're not having to look at Facebook at the same time you're having a conversation with them.
Right. So finally, we're nonspecific. We're building empathy. We're trying to ritualize, make this part of our routine. We also don't want to get discouraged when this doesn't go the way we think it's going to go.
Right, right.
So talk to us a little bit about being consistent, about kind of committing to this process, even if your teenagers say, I don't know, or yeah. I'm not sure, or I don't care, or whatever.
Yeah, the infamous response from all teenagers is, I don't know, or I'm fine. They want to be really certain that the relationship is safe enough to start sharing their inner world. Mm-hmm. Because to them, the inner world is confusing. They're again, not certain who they are. Mm-hmm. And so very often they want to use avoidance or, hiding as a way to protect themselves from that level of exposure. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important for parents to not take that personally. Mm-hmm. When a kid says, I don't know, it's not because the kid doesn't love you or doesn't care about you. They're scared. Mm-hmm. And so your job is to be reassuring as possible, mm-hmm. and not be threatened by that, what is apparent rejection.
Right.
So if your kid says, I don't want to talk right now, please leave me alone, tell them that's okay. No problem. Mm-hmm. That you will check in with them later, that you may even check in with them tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And that it's really important. You can tell them that it's really important that we talk, mm-hmm. or that I want to engage you in a conversation, but I'm not going to be so high pressure on this that it stresses you out. Mm-hmm. And you just continue. Not only do we need a curiosity stance, we need an invitation stance. Mm-hmm. It's not that we're forcing the kids into these conversations. We're inviting them into the conversations. And with any invitation, people have the option to not RSVP. They mm-hmm. have the option to decline. Mm-hmm. And our teens are going to decline, and we can't get threatened or angry or disappointed with that. Mm-hmm. All we can do is to continue to invite. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee if we'll see it as a process of invitation, as a process of open doors and opening our heart to hearing them, mm-hmm. they will eventually start to do it.
Right.
But when it doesn't happen, we have to wait. Mm-hmm. And waiting is the hard part. Mm-hmm. Being patient and waiting for them to engage us is scary because we're afraid, well, what if they never talk to me? Mm-hmm. My experience is they typically come around if we'll be patient.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems important too, if you tell a teenager, okay, if you don't want to talk now, I'll check in later, that you actually check in later.
Yes. The follow-up is super important.
Well, I mean, because I think it'd be easy just to say, okay, you know, I'm cool, I'm going to walk away, but then secretly be kind of frustrated about it and then just forget about it and never do it.
Right.
But actually do what you say you're going to do and say, I'm going to check in with you now or later or whatever, but this is, you know, I'm going to be there. I'm going to do it and then actually do it.
Yeah. When I say that we can't be offended or angry or disappointed in that, I really mean it. Mm-hmm. We have to work on our internal world as much as we're trying to help them with theirs. Right. And we are the adults. We are the hopefully a little bit more developed of the two in this equation. Mm-hmm. And so we have to do our own internal work in that situation. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, if we make us a promise to check in with them later, the adult thing to do is to follow through on that and not retaliate because they didn't talk to me now.
Right.
Or they didn't share now.
Right.
Or there, I saw a sitcom yesterday where a mom was just so hurt that her daughter didn't want to talk about who she had a crush on. And the mom was just really sad and disappointed. And the funny part was she ended up breaking her daughter's phone as she's trying to get into it. And now she was exposed for trying to spy on her daughter. And her daughter had to come back to her and say, I'm not trying to keep you out of my world. I'm just not sure it's the time to tell you yet. And she was being very mature about it. She said, but when I'm ready to tell somebody, you're going to be the first person I tell. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times it's just waiting on the child to be ready to tell us. Mm-hmm. And we have to have the inner strength to do that waiting and right. be patient.
Right. Okay. So with all this, finally, how does the life of a teenager look different if we commit to this regular check-in?
I think, our teenagers will feel safer. And an essential skill or essential thing we all need for healthy development is safety. Mm-hmm. They don't see adults or parents as threatening figures, but they see parents as a safe person that they can come share their world with. And then two, they develop a better sense of who they are. Mm-hmm. Every time we use empathy to talk through an individual's inner world where they feel understood, it's like we're holding a mirror up to them and mm-hmm. they're beginning to see a little bit about themselves. Not in a way that is threatening or exposing, but it's in a gentle way. Mm-hmm. It's in a loving and a kind way. And as we do that, they start to see who they are and what their gifts are, what their skills are, where their weaknesses are. Mm-hmm. And it's in those empathetic conversations that they start to become and better understand who they were created to be.
Carly, I was really excited when we decided to do the check-in as our very first podcast. And for a lot of reasons, I would think the main one being in our support groups, when we start our groups every single week, this is what we do. This is a huge foundational piece of the support group. And week one of our support groups tends to really introduce what this looks like. So we have several different ways we do this. We do the Fist of Five activity. We do scaling. We do all kinds of different ways that students can check in. But I find that tends to be the thing that's a really identifiable marker for a student is they know when they come in to a group, the adult is going to check in on them and do so in a way that they will find no judgment. Mm-hmm. So if their week really stinks or they've failed a lot of stuff or this is the first thing they've come to at school the whole week, we're not going to judge them for it. We're just seeing where they are because we want to get that baseline so we can see where we can go from there. So I was thrilled about being able to talk to Mark about this and have this great conversation.
Yeah, and I thought so many things that he said. I took note after note on this podcast, just loving the quotes that he had and points that he made. But one that I thought was really huge was that it is essential to have curiosity and in that it's more important to ask questions than to make statements. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so key and something that we see in our groups all the time. There's a huge difference between me making a statement at a student and me asking a question, even mm-hmm. if I think I know the answer. Because a lot of times, A, I don't, mm-hmm. or B, they will completely shut down if I make a statement. But if I ask a question that's welcoming, telling them I'm curious, I want to know more, that is when they start to open up and give you real answers instead of being like, it seems like you're tired today. Mm-hmm. You must be having a really bad week. Instead of, how's your week going? Mm-hmm. Have you gotten sleep? What's something bad that's been happening? What's something good? And then they have a chance to talk instead of me talking at them.
Right. Curiosity is huge. And I think if you're a parent listening to this, understanding, you know, what are you curious about? Are you curious because, you know, you think there's something up? Mm-hmm. Or are you curious because you want to know your kid better, you know?
Right.
And if you don't have that worked out, I think that's gonna play out no matter what. Because I think if you're curious because you think they're up to something, they're gonna sniff that out pretty quick. But being a curious listener, as a parent, of really wanting to get to know your student in a better way, even if you feel like you know them really, really well, really comes through. You know, for me, one of the things he really talked about a lot that I thought was crucial for us to keep in the back of our minds is this idea of routine or ritual mm-hmm. That surrounds the check-in. And when we do our support groups, part of it is because we meet weekly. That kind of ritualizes it because just showing up to a group is kind of a ritual in and of itself. But they know when they come in, that's going to be the first thing we do. We're going to check in some way. And so sometimes, like in my groups, I have a standard question that I ask. I say, tell me one good thing that's going on for you this week. And that gives them the chance to, you know, think about the positives in their life. Or if they literally have nothing good, they can say that. Right. But they know that question's coming every single week. And that's just how I do it. And it works really well for me. Other people have different questions that they ask. But there are all these questions that students know on a regular basis. I can't I can't hide. Someone's going to be checking on me. Someone needs to know what's going on with me.
Right. And so whether it's that, what's something good that's going on, another popular one and one that I typically use in my groups is tell me a high and a low of this week. Mm-hmm. What's been the best thing of your day? What's been the worst thing of your day? Even if it's not something super great, a boy told me one time he ate Taco Bell. That's great. Mm-hmm. If that's your high for the week, let's talk about that. But another thing too that I thought was so important is you have to allow them to say either I don't know or I'm not sure right now, and to give them space and say, okay, I'll ask you about it tomorrow or mm-hmm. I'll ask you about it later tonight. Mm-hmm. But what's key to that is you have to follow up. Mm. I can't tell you how many times, and sometimes it's hard when you only see teenagers once a week like we do, when they bring something up. And they're like, I don't want to talk about it yet. And I'm saying, I'm going to ask you about that next week. Mm-hmm. If I don't remember to ask, that automatically tells that teenager, I said that, but I don't care enough to follow up about
it. Right. And as parents, we have those opportunities. And as adults, we have the opportunities to regularly check in with your students. And we start with this because, first of all, we feel like it's so important. But I think it's a simple tool that you can use that will make a significant difference in the life of your teenager.
All right. Hey, everyone. This is Carly, and I'm here with Jason Brown, one of our facilitators. How long have you been doing groups?
You know, I've been doing groups with Teen Life for about 3 years now.
Okay. Awesome. So why don't you start and tell us just a little bit about the groups that you've done currently or in the past?
Sure thing. I've worked with a drug rehab group, and it's a group that's taken place over in Fort Worth for about 3 years, and that's been the longest group I've worked with consistently on a weekly basis, really. And it's a group of at-risk teens. Well, I guess you could say at-risk, but these are teens who have been incarcerated, in juvenile, in probation, who are on probation, who are trying to go through and meet some requirements that they need to do to get out of facility, get off of probation, and move on with their lives and better themselves. I've worked with high school groups at some of our local schools. I have done a teen parent group, which was a lot of fun, as well as a middle school boys and a middle school girls group as of very recently.
So sounds like you've done it all.
I've been in the middle of all of it, yes. It's been great.
That's awesome. So what do you see teens in your group struggle with today?
I think some of the biggest things our teens are struggling with, one would be a sense of belonging. I think a lot of teens struggle with that, mm-hmm. but more so I see a lot of these teens coming to the group and they just don't know where they fit in their school, in their environment, and they're looking for a place to belong. They're struggling with who am I, who are the people around me, and what am I doing? The other piece I think they really struggle with is confidence. Another piece that I think a lot of teens struggle with, obviously, these maybe more so that are coming and being a part of these groups, mm-hmm. Just confidence in themselves, confident in their ability, confident in their just the world around them and how they're interacting with it. And they're trying to find themselves. I think the third thing I would look at is self-control and impulsivity. I see that in a lot of these students that come into these groups, where their boundaries are. How to set boundaries for themselves, how to say no when they get themselves into situations, especially ones who are in our drug group that we do, drug rehab group, saying no to people when they push their boundaries, saying no to getting into fights, saying no to situations that are uncomfortable and they'll cave and give in. And a lot of that goes back to the confidence in themselves also.
Right. And so going off of these struggles, what do you think these teen life groups can offer as a benefit to students?
Sure. I think some of the biggest benefits, first off, is just a place to belong. Mm-hmm. They come and become part of that group, and you see it the first time they're there. You know, we create a very open environment to talk and a safe environment for them. It's a place to belong, a place for them to be a part of. And as the group develops, they almost every one of those students coming into those groups have definitely found a place to belong in there and a role to play. Also a place to be heard. A lot of these students that come in, I've noticed, just want to talk, want to share their story, want to be listened to. And not only as a facilitator do we get to listen, but also the students in the groups listen to them also.
Right.
And then also a place to learn about themselves and how to make better choices. And I like to tell the students as they come. Usually I'll remind them several times throughout our group experience that this group is about becoming a more awesome version of you. Hmm. And they seem to get a laugh out of that, but it's also what we're really doing. So.
Right, exactly. And then going to the school side, what benefit does this present to schools, to counselors, teachers, the school people that you're working with?
Definitely. No, I think when they're in a group setting in the school and they're coming out and being part of a teen life group, one, it's obviously that place to belong again and a place for them to find a place to fit in with a group of students. A lot of these students find themselves not fitting in with the peers around them in class, on teams and other places they're trying to be a part of. And they come to this group and they find that and they become more confident in themselves, in their abilities, in the choices that they make. And it's in a place where they can be themselves and they can be heard. And with that, they take that back out with them into the world, into the school around them. And I think they're better students because they've been able to talk and share and get some things that may be deep in their hearts and on their minds to just off their chest and be able to talk about it. Some of the other things that I think that they a school definitely helps is developing a sense of self-control. We talk a lot about making choices. We talk a lot about the resources that they have already in place in their lives, you know, following a solution-focused approach with these groups. And they're able to take that and develop that sense of, man, I have some resources in my life and I have some things available and I'm already doing some things really well. How do I do these things more? And when they take that out into the school, my hope is that they're developing a sense of self-control. They're losing that impulsivity. They're able to make choices where they're not getting in trouble, where they're not finding themselves alone, where they're not finding themselves isolated or picked on by other students, but they're able to be more confident in themselves also. So I think that definitely helps the school system in a better student.
The Stay Calm, Don't Panic podcast is produced by Teen Life. Your hosts are Chris Roby and Carly Duke. If you want to check out today's notes, resources, and music, please visit our website at don'tpanicpodcast.org. Or you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Don't Panic Talk. Now here's a word from our sponsor, Lubbock Christian University.
This is the university for us, the thoughtfully engaged. For those who pursue wisdom so that they can better serve the community. For the minds that strive to make a difference. This has always been the university for those who seek a truly transformative education. This is the university for you. Lubbock Christian University.